to the masses of the world. But our emotional appeal, no matter how effective, has a top from one day, and then your emotional appeal begins to drift off.
Furthermore, no one can get an idiot's direction.
That's right. Well, I told them that you can develop out of the known deep-seated longing of the people of the world to take peace. That they can demonstrate that by some little means, yes, simple plan, fine. But you have got to have behind that the research, the study that can give it the proper direction. Because Americans can, I remember well the Spanish-American War, when we had a ship sunk in Manila Harbor, in Havana Harbor, and the emotions of the United States drove the administration into war. They had, well, that was misdirected emotion.
Did it ever occur to you that that was probably an accident?
Yes, I think it was probably.
Because the wind was diametrically the opposite direction from the direction it was in 99/100 of the time in Havana.
No.
And the Spaniards were very inefficient, very careless, and they didn't allow me to score, so it's not school.
Well, I read numbers of articles on that impact of contention. One that was deliberate, and the other was accident. And the only thing they did prove, I think, was an external explosion. But
I read Tigby's report.
Oh yes, so did
I. And I saw the remains of the brain down in one of the
hills. Oh, that's all.
I was still speaking up about this one and a half.
Oh, yeah. Well, in any event, this thing, I mean, emotion is a dangerous thing unless it has a solid basis of intellectual research to guide it.
Emotion is to be by the ministers and by the mother and the school. As far as we are concerned, I consider that enormously more important what happens in Korea than what happens in New York at the present time. In other words, if the Russians think they can deal with their prejudice, if they think they can't, it's quite as they are
today. Well, I personally believe that the Russian himself is not going deliberately to challenge to a global war at this instant. No one knows when he will do it. And moreover, he is going to spare no pains to try to put as great a burden on us as possible, to damage our economy, to upset our whole productive and industrial processes, and to upset our way of thinking, and particularly our standing with each other. He is trying to clip off from us all of the natural supporters. He wants them behind the iron curtain. And if he can squeeze more and more of the world surface into his under his control, finally he'll say, "I've got those babies where I want." That's what he's trying to do.
All he wants is everything there is. It's worth stealing.
That's
free ongoing cars, education, free food, and so on.
Yes.
I've been in Russia. I was thousands of miles in Russia. And the mental affliction of the Russians is so unbelievable. For instance, I was present 52 years ago to building that pipeline to go to some school from the Mediterranean Sea. And they were testing each joint pipe with hand pumps putting it in water 20 minutes to each joint. I believe rate of doing that job is 200 times as fast as that, or more. And I don't think I ever was on a train in Russia that was on time. There were thousands of miles by train in Russia. At that time, they were producing more oil than we were. They were producing about 100 million barrels, and they were producing something like 97 million barrels. Yeah, now we're 2 billion, rather over 2 billion. And, well, I don't have a fifth
people, particularly in our Catholic nation, who make a distinction between communism and Russia.
Yeah.
300 miles an hour, you could have literally have torn down half a city block before it exploded. See?
Yeah.
Actually, they came so fast that on their vertical direction, they were always into the ground. They couldn't possibly put a fuse on it that it exploded on the level of the ground. They were way down in, therefore their force was exerted merely upward. And unless they went down through a building, they didn't hurt anything.
Yeah, and the Indians of London gave more than three times as many spaces between the buildings as the buildings themselves.
That's right. And as I say, that was the defect of the V-2. It came in so fast.
Yeah.
It was impossible to keep it from going way down on the ground before it exploded. Now the, of course, land-wise, certain of the things they wanted to do that with, but that was a nuisance by the boat in a general bombing raid. But the V-1, was it everything? It exploded on the surface of the ground, and if it was in any populated area, its blasting effect was terrific. That was a different thing with
ours. Yeah. But the one thing that was,
and
you couldn't hit it in
one part of
the way
anymore. Well, no, they could keep you coming in a pretty good stream toward London, but they weren't very active. Moreover, you could, after you perfected your means, you could shoot them down before they got into dangerous areas.
Yes, that's what the Indians did.
But the beats too, there was just no defense. There was no sense of preparing for it or against it because there was nothing you could do about it. V-2, yeah. The only thing you knew was when you heard it, you were safe. Because no matter what happened, if you heard it, it exploded. And you were that particular. If there was any V-2 that ever killed anyone, killed him without him ever knowing. Because he came in so fast, it was far ahead of his time.
Yeah. Well, I would like very much to see a catapult being put in the diagonal because it not only has a utility in time of war, but also in time of peace. In order to aim artillery to the takeoff, which is fun, spend time.
When I go down there again, I'm going to do it. I'm going to ask the boys, because you know now, on many of our jet planes, they have what they call rocket-assisted takeoff. They have some rocket help to get them. Now, that's an application of the same principle, but they still use the runway. And you were talking about a system of using a catapult.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you about it.
Why the Germans used those rockets, chiefly, as I understand it, to make it possible for fighter planes to get off of small areas
that
they could not get off of. That's right.
And of course, you use a hope for that and you speed up the time table.
So that they're driven down, they can get up again.
Well, they've got all sorts of things like that. And they also have them on some of our planes, in experimental fashion at least. Suppose you are up in battle and it becomes necessary to pick up for the next few miles from terrific speed. They turn on those things and in spite of the amount of fuel they use, you can go up to terrific speeds for short distances and break off combat.
Have you ever met Senator
Lodge? Oh yes,
he's a good friend of mine. I knew his grandfather very well. He was a third cousin of mine. And I think he's a very evil fellow, this young man.
Yes, I think he is. He's very clear-headed.
And he's been on the spot. He's had practically experience in warfare.
Oh yes, he was. Matter of fact, I sent him off to war. When he went over to Egypt, I sent him over. Then he was with the French army in Alsace-Lorraine. He came up there, Dillon's army, and with Bill Bullock and those people. Then he was with George Patton. Yes, he's a very good man.
He said, whereas, when slavery began, when man's slave began, it took the three quarters of your horsepower to raise yourself into the air. Now, it's much less than one-tenth of your horsepower is expended in sustaining the weight machine, and more than nine-tenths is simply overcoming the air resistance. Because the horsepower is wired to drive it through the air increases with the cube of the velocity. The horsepower is wired to sustain diminishes directly with the velocity. That is approximately that, not mathematically. But within limits of good practice in flight, that is the general situation. And that is why the matter of kilometers and takeoff becomes so enormously important. Because now we are modifying the areas of our air domes in a, well, looking more than the fourth power of the acceleration in the area. And it's very important to have another method additional to that.
You want to keep these things down in a reasonable size.
Yes, and to give a much greater acceleration than you can give a method. It's not.
Actually, you know, if you would. If you would increase the airplane travel today of the way some of our visionaries seem to see it, I sometimes wonder where we'd have the ground to put the fields. And maybe the answer is finding these ways and means of contacting them.
Yes. Of course, we'd want to have larger air domes because the air traffic is going to increase. And in my judgment, it is going to become within 10 or 20 years, the freight will be more important than the passenger.
Yeah, I know a number of people who believe that.
Well, that's the case of the railroad, you know. Railroads were simply stage coaches with a place to pack it, just put the baggage, like with John Quincy Adams. And now, of course, he's turning to the railroads, and the function of the railroads and carrying freight is enormously more important than the passenger.
I should say the only limitation I see usefulness to the airplane is really this factor of weather, which interferes with them so markedly. I don't mean to say that it interferes with their actual flying. They fly now almost any kind of weather. But the second that they do, if you are putting 12 planes, let's say you're putting a 15 planes an hour on a certain strip, bringing them in out here at LaGuardia and taking off in the same time, 15 planes. Now, as quickly as it gets bad weather and you have to come in by instrument, that's slowed down to, let's say, 4 an hour, something like that. You're in very slow. The result is the planes stack up until they have to cancel flights because they just can't get in at any time. Sport flying. I don't think there's any room in the air for sport flying.
sons, two of my sons were air pilots in the First World War, and they, neither of them have flight squad. One of them is dead, the other one does an enormous amount of passing flying space.
Yeah.
So that's another story.
Equation that as these planes are increasing, we have at the same time increasingly efficient our assistance and gas. And then, of course, this doesn't apply to the sport plane, which isn't gas carrying equipment, but these big vertical planes now come in a plane, a vertical plane, that they get out of it a few feet, and instantly there's a warning, and they get back in it.
Vertically over Monica. One curious thing is that it's so much less ocean flying over the sea, flying over the land on
Europe.
I've crossed the ocean about three times, all three times.
So I have had in storms to go up very, very high over the ocean. I've had to go up to 4,000 feet. And this is before the days when I had to put together my trunk up there.
Well, I can say that.
You want to take oxygen, if anyone had any trouble with their ears or their nose, it could be pretty bad.
I've never been in that.
Well, flying over storms. But I think I've flown over the ocean more often at below 5,000 feet than I have at above
5,000 feet. So why? Because I'm totally
playing the
I couldn't get above 7,000. But then, of course, since the war was over, I have flown as a pilot. I'm the honorary president of the International Federation. I had to bring it together and get started again after World War. And I couldn't get across the ocean unless I swam.
Because I've never seen it in operation. But he was very enthusiastic about it, and I hope. They say that the plant they're building now will make it at about, I think it's $2 a pound. But
oh, no, much fluffy.
So I'm going to have any no offense from the
this evening, this afternoon, and I don't know what the hell's all about.
I don't know if we see you. Dean Ackerman is here to tell you about the Inter-American business this morning, and the Turner Group is speaking in the rotunda this afternoon.
Well, tell them, for Christ's sake, tell Ackerman to come in, but let me see my day's calendar. I just am on the wall. You see, I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Oh, he's talking about the affair out here in the rotunda, and you are not scheduled for that. We figured that when Mr. Brooks came here, that he could drop into the office for a few minutes, but we don't know whether he'll have a chance or not. But that's not on your calendar, General.
Yeah. He puts these goddamn things on here so fast together that I just don't
know. That's the Maria Moore's Cabot complication. Remember last year you had those four Spanish-speaking editors, and you said you didn't want to attend any more of the convocations, and this year the prophet has taken your place.
Yeah, I wanted to. He takes my place, but I want to do we sit down? Do we sit down on those things?
You can't get away. You're up there on the dais in the north end of the rotunda. And as
well, I'm back on account of this Cabot, who's never been explained to me before. So the guy is a very great aeronautical engineer. The head of a corporation and comes in and wants to know how the hell he can help me out. I'm very sitting going out.
Well, he's already given us an actual money. We probably have $600,000-$700,000 from him. On the books we showed it's only $300,000 or $400,000.
But all that money's going into the truly journalism. Well, now you see. Here he is today. He showed no interest at all in journalism. He's talking about other things.
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes, what the hell are we doing? Well, what's Bruce doing?
He's speaking before the Maria Moore's Cabot Awards are being made this afternoon, and Bruce is the principal speaker.
Well, suppose we get in Ackerman.
Yes, he will.